This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Listen to Dubai Eye's Business Breakfast. These are the best bits from the show on Thursday, April the 21st. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Sarah Hewardine. Sarah's from Hauser Real Estate, who will be telling us about the UAE's new visa initiatives and visa programs. What impact is that going to have on the real estate market? Jessica Ramir spoke to us a little earlier on in the day, an Australian market analyst from Saxo Bank. We wanted to get Jessica's thoughts on a turbulent day for Netflix over on the Wall Street stock market. Bad day for Netflix, great day for Tesla, is the take from Jessica. Anita Yadav of Global Credit Advisory coming up as well. Anita is our go-to whenever we start talking bonds, not the James type of bonds, of which also cropped up in conversation as to who's going to be the next, but more to the point, the brand new UAE dirham derivative bond. What's it all mean for us? We put that to Anita. That was one of the big talkers of the day. It was all things UAE bond on a Thursday. And Netflix catching the attention for the wrong reasons with their loss in value after the latest earnings findings. That is the Bite Size Business Breakfast. One of the big talkers today, and something of an education for many out there, is all things bonds. And thankfully, we've got our very own bond here with us. He's from the north and carries off a polo neck very well. Richard Dean is alongside us. So how do you explain to the wider, not the wider, the wider UAE this morning, how significant bonds are?
Right. I'll give you the brief version. Essentially, the UAE government has announced bonds in dirhams. And you think, why is that interesting? Doesn't every government in the world issue bonds in its own currency? And they kind of do. But this is interesting. Not, I don't think, because the UAE needs the money, which it doesn't. It's 1.5 billion dirhams. Our economy is a 1.5 trillion dirham economy, and it's growing fast, and oil's above $100 a barrel. What they say, and you've been looking at the comments as well, haven't you, from the guys from the Ministry of Finance, what they say is that this is about setting a benchmark so that companies can borrow. Because if you think about the United States, the world's biggest bond market, US Treasuries, if you're Netflix or a steel plant in Pittsburgh or whatever you are, you want to issue a bond, or you're a fracker in the Permian Basin, you issue a bond and you get a spread above US Treasuries. That's fine. And the market will decide. You get a rating or whatever it is, and it'll say, well, you are 2% above US Treasuries, or you're 6% above US Treasuries, or whatever it may be. We don't really have that benchmark here, and therefore companies here, and we talked about, you know, a pharmaceutical company in Ras Al Khaimah, for example, there is no dirham benchmark for it to go to the market and say, we want to build a new paracetamol factory in Ras Al Khaimah. What's the benchmark government bond level? And we'll pay a bit more than that. We don't have that. We didn't have that benchmark, but we do now. And you've been looking, I know, at the comments from Mohammed Al-Husseini, who's the Minister of State for Financial Affairs. And he says this: issuing the T-bonds in local currency will contribute to building a local currency bond market, diversifying financial resources, boosting the local financial and banking sector, as well as providing safe investment alternatives for local and foreign investors. And that's what it's about. It's about building financial markets. It's not about the government needing money and borrowing 1.5 billion dirhams, because happily, thankfully, the UAE government is in a situation where it doesn't have to do that.
I mean, is that optimism, or is that fact in terms of the foreign investment thing? Will this bring in foreign investment?
No, I don't think it will bring in foreign investment. I don't think foreign investors are going to be flocking to this bond. I mean, they might if there's a search for yield, and we don't know what the yield will be or the interest rate will be now. No, it's more about local companies. Mm. This is about the local economy and local companies. Like I said, you know, you go to Ajman and you've got a company that's already got a cement factory and wants to build a second cement factory. If they can go to the bond market and get a decent, borrow money at a decent yield, it's about that. It's about the cement factory in Ajman issuing a bond to build a second facility. And it's about the boat builder in Umm Al Quwain who wants to expand and add 3 new warehouses building boats and wants to issue a bond. It's about them.
So when this was announced yesterday, there was a big focus and a couple of the sort of buzzwords that were coming out from analysts and from the announcement itself. The B word, bond, was everywhere, as was curves. They were talking about curves a lot, specific, not everyday curves, but yield curves nonetheless, because that's got a big play, isn't it?
Well, there is a yield curve. The yield curve is essentially the interest rate in the short term, 2 years, versus the interest rate in the long term, 10 years. And people get very, well, 2 weeks ago, people got very excited that the US yield curve was inverted for about 4.5 minutes on a Wednesday afternoon, but it was, because it's sometimes a signal that a recession is coming if long-term interest rates are shorter than or lower than short-term interest rates. So yeah, so you get a yield curve and exactly that. So let's go back to the boat builder in Umm Al Quwain. If they say, well, we want to borrow money, but we only want it for 3 years, we'll issue a three-year bond, that's fine. Then the interest rate is, I don't know, 2.5%. But if you want to borrow over 10 years, typically it's higher. If you want to borrow that money over 10 years, then your interest rate will be, say, 5% or whatever it is. I mean, I made those numbers up, and of course, you know, yield curves, and they change on a minute-by-minute or daily basis. But if we don't have a yield curve at the moment, again, so it's very difficult, not impossible, but difficult for the boat builder in Umm Al Quwain to go to the bond market and say, I want to issue a bond, and I'm going to pay 3.67%, and I want it over 5 years. It's just hard at the moment. But if you have a benchmark government bond, it's a lot easier. That's what it's about.
Is there opportunity, is there context here for the region? Is this a first of its kind in the region, or have others been done here?
Good question. Don't know. We'll ask Anita. But I do know this. About 6 years ago, Saudi Arabia issued bonds, and it was a big bond. It was an awful lot of money. And indulge me for 1 minute and 5 seconds, because at the time, the late, great Malcolm Taylor was still here, and he challenged me, because I talked about the big Saudi bond, to record a song in the style of Big Bad John. You know the song?
I do know the
song. Big John.
Big John.
So I did. And this, making an appearance for one morning only, is my tribute to the big Saudi bond.
Big John.
Well, we knew it would be big, Saudi wanted to test us, but demand was off the chart from institutional investors. Talk of $50 billion made some guys laugh, but in the end they raised 17 and a half. Big bond.
Big John. Big John.
Well, it was mainly Asians bought the big Saudi bond, 5 years, 10 years, even 30 years long, with predictable returns, whatever your measure is, yielding 40 basis points above US Treasuries. Big bond. What'll Saudi do with this newfound cash? Plug a deficit, avoid a crash. Not a nickel will be wasted on bread and circuses, every dime assigned to general budgetary purposes. Big bond.
Big John. John.
Big Saudi bond.
It's worth it every time, isn't it?
That was 2016. Saudi Arabia raised $17.5 billion from its first foray into the global bond markets. Of course, oil prices were lower then.
Are you working on the UAE bond follow-up as well?
Yeah.
You just need another country and Western classic, do you, to set it to at the moment?
Well, I was thinking of the James Bond theme.
Oh, very good. See? Working already on it. More on this one throughout the course of this morning. We've got loads. Thank you very much indeed. Here come the text messages. Rahul, good on you. Richard putting Eminem to shame as well. Eminem does Saudi bonds. That I'd take that one on, wouldn't you?
Well, the guy who did the song Big John back in the 50s, his name was Dean. Jimmy Dean.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And he was a TV show host as well. And do you know how he made his money?
No.
Hot dogs.
Really?
Yeah, he made wieners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he had a sausage factory.
Good on him.
he did very well.
Lots of questions coming through for us on All Things Bonds, and thankfully we've got people to answer them throughout. Anita Yadav will be joining us, so we'll put those to Anita. Hilary, thank you to you. Brilliant, Richard. You need to do the wrap-off with Sonal. Willing to take that one on?
Absolutely,
BB versus Off Script.
Yeah. BBX off script.
Suresh saying, wow, Mr. Richard, you are a singer too as well. Noel's been in touch this morning. Move over 50 Cent. Dollar Dean is in the house.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Bond comes to the UAE was the headline. I got very excited.
Who else could we turn to on the bond market than our long-time fixed income expert, Anita Yadav, CEO of Global Credit Advisory, joins us now on the line and also on Microsoft Teams. Morning, Anita.
Good morning, Richard.
So, the UAE has announced the launch of a conventional, not Islamic, conventional dirham-denominated bond. The benchmark size is pretty small, 1.5 billion dirhams. I mean, it's not small for me, but it's smaller in the context of the UAE government. They want to not so much raise money to pay the bills, but to build a local currency bond market. What was your initial reaction when you saw this news?
This is a fabulous development. We have been advocating for the government to issue in local currency for nearly a decade now. So, you know, if you, Richard, if you look at Saudi and Qatar and even Bahrain and Oman, their issuance in local currency is ahead of what we have done in the dirham market. So we were lagging a little bit. I'm really pleased to see this development. And I think this will achieve a lot of positives. But if I was to just highlight, say, three key points, one thing it'll do is it'll open doors for, you know, another source of funding for the corporates. Why? Because once the government sets a risk-free benchmark, it's a lot easier to price corporate bonds, which means the local corporates will be able to issue bonds in dirham currency. So that's fantastic news in terms of access to the market for the local corporates, and that will help them grow and boost the economy. Second, what it does is it allows the government to manage our own economy and its growth and direction in a more efficient manner. So if you look at let me explain that. If you look at right now, because our currencies are pegged to the dollar, we have to follow the monetary policy adopted by the Federal Reserve. Now, inflation in the US is 8.5%, but inflation in the UAE is only 2.5%. Federal Reserve may want to raise rates at a rapid rate. We probably don't need to, but we will be forced to because of the linkage to the, because of the pegged currency. Now, what happens is there are other ways of managing money in the economy, and that would be by using the fiscal policy and by deciding how much to issue in the dirham market and how much not to. So by increasing the issuance or reducing the issuance, the government will be able to manage, the central bank will be able to manage flow of money in the economy and may be able to manage economic direction, growth direction a lot better.
Okay, Anita, what does it mean for someone who's driving to work this morning or sitting on their sofa watching us on Dubai One TV thinking, should I buy these bonds? What kind of yield or interest rate or coupon, call it what you want, what can they look forward to? What are like Abu Dhabi bonds or Sharjah bonds yielding at the moment? And what kind of interest rate can we expect on these?
Remember that the Sharjah Abu Dhabi government bonds are in dollar at the moment, right? And then the yield really depends on what tenor you're looking at. 2 year, 5 year, 7 year would all be somewhere around 2.5% to 4%, depending on the credit quality of the issuer. So an Abu Dhabi government, you know, may be trading at a 2.5% yield, and Sharjah may be able to give you 3.5. Now, don't go by just that number, because a lot depends on what currency it is in and what tenor we are talking about. In dirham, again, to begin with, at least the yield on dirham may also be in same trend as the dollar, because our currencies are pegged at the moment. So it'll probably follow the same track, but slightly higher than the yield that investors will get on the dollar-denominated bonds.
Okay, so Neeraj has written in. So what kind of yield can I expect? Is it what, that 2.5% to 4% range that you mentioned, or something different?
2.5% to 5%. Now, yield also depends on where the interest rates are. Today, the yield may be 2.5%, but if Federal Reserve is raising rates by, you know, 75 basis points next month, then 2 months down the line, the yield could be 3.5%. So it also depends at the time at when these bonds are issued.
Okay, fine. Question from Andy Mack in earlier this morning. Is there a guarantee that the bonds will get paid back if Andy buys them?
Absolutely, in my mind. If we look at the government, UAE government coffers, our debt to GDP is very low. Abu Dhabi government is rated in the AA category. So overall, UAE as a nation is rated in AA category, which is one of the, you know, very close to the highest AAA rating. I have absolutely no doubt that, yes, these will be paid. With a very, very, very minuscule statistical possibility that there may be some delays or defaults. This is based on the current credit quality of the government. But mind you, when you issue in local currency, the default risk becomes even lower because the government can always go back and refinance the bonds again.
It could just get the central bank to print some money and then pay them back.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think, Andy, honestly, mate, I think the UAE government's good for 1.5 billion dirhams. But nothing is zero risk in this world. So, Anita, finally, the Ministry of Finance has made great play of the fact that they're doing this to create a benchmark so that corporates can borrow. And we were chatting earlier on about, you know, a boat builder in Umm Al Quwain who wants to double capacity to build more yachts. Something like that. Is that really going to happen, Anita? We've got about 45 seconds left.
You know what? The door has been opened. Now, it will happen, but at what speed will the corporates adopt and will issue? Obviously, time will tell. When the economy is growing and corporates need a lot of money, the issuance will come out faster. Yeah, but I have no doubt it will definitely happen. Whether it happens within 6 months or, you know, 2 years or 3 years, time will tell.
Anita, as always, great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning and appreciate you being our bond expert on the Business Breakfast for donkey's years now. Thanks very much indeed. That is the voice of the Chief Executive Officer of Global Credit Advisory here in Dubai, Anita Yadav, answering your questions on the new UAE bond.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about some of the big news on Wall Street overnight, because we've heard from some of the biggest companies, including Tesla, including Netflix. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Jessica Amir, who's Australian market strategist at Saxo Bank. Hey, Jessica, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks very much indeed for being with us. Can we talk about Netflix first of all? Because we got the numbers out actually about 36 hours ago. And we knew that the shares were going to fall on the back of it. We thought maybe about 20-25%. But yesterday on Wall Street, they fell 35%. What's the problem at Netflix, Jessica?
Well, unfortunately, it's not one problem alone. So at the moment, Netflix has finally pulled back the wall and I guess revealed what we all know is going on. And there's a huge shift away from the stay-home economy stocks into more of the experiential economy. And that's not really favouring Netflix, firstly. But secondly, Netflix have really cottoned on to the fact that people can share their passwords, and they're well aware of that. And so they're guiding for subscriber numbers to continue to fall. So subscriber numbers fell, Richard, for the first time in 10 years. So subscribers down 200,000. And next quarter, subscribers are predicted to fall by 2 million. So this is quite considerable, firstly. And secondly, what that means is lower earnings and profits. And the market is now coming to terms with that, and they're expecting earnings downgrades and expecting an ugly year ahead. So investors are increasingly getting out of Netflix and going into those more experiential economy stocks and also commodities that are likely to do well over the next year ahead.
This is an interesting theme that you're talking about, the stay-at-home stocks versus the experimental economy stocks. And we heard from one analyst earlier actually talking about that, saying, yeah, people are going to Vegas and Disneyland instead of staying in on the sofa and watching Tiger King or so on. What are the other so-called stay-at-home stocks that we should be watching?
Well, I think Disney is going to be one to definitely watch. Disney, I guess people kind of forget that they do make a large portion of their money from the stay-at-home economy world, given the shift to their online model. So I think you have to keep in mind that 24% of their revenue, Richard, comes from the consumer. So yes, stocks like Disney will be benefiting from the rise in international travel again, and with cruise boats also being around the world again. But we are expecting a little bit of heat to come out of these stocks. But many of these stocks are Zoom, Disney, they are all down, and they have been heavily sold off since November last year after the Fed pivoted to rates rising. So I think we could potentially see some surprises in stocks like Disney, but we are quite cautious.
What did you make of Tesla's numbers overnight? Revenue and profit both beating on the upside. Elon Musk says it is challenging at the moment because they can't get enough parts to build as many Teslas as people want. But the numbers were good. What was your take?
Yeah, they absolutely were good. We were expecting strong numbers on the quarter, and we are expecting strong numbers for the next quarter. However, the year ahead, Richard, doesn't look good. And that's because the lithium price is expected to potentially double. And that is going to hurt their costs. And that means that their earnings, or their EBITDA and their profits, are expected to fall. So margins are expected to fall. The headline numbers are expected to get stronger, but the growth is at a lesser margin. And we all know that earnings growth drives share price growth. So we are expecting to see a bit of a lackluster year ahead for Tesla, unless they can really come out and indeed buy a lithium mine like Elon Musk previously alluded to. So I think if you are looking for upside in this space, so it's worthwhile looking at the lithium stocks in the ground in Nevada and also in the US. So I actually did my homework and looked at some stocks in the vicinity to Tesla. And I can see one that's listed in New York, and they're also listed on the ASX as well, Richard. They're called Piedmont Lithium. PLL is their ticker. So I think Elon could potentially move and take over a lithium stock in the area so that he doesn't see costs continuing to rise as he previously alluded to. So I think he'd prefer to keep his costs a bit more controlled. All in all, we are expecting the headline numbers to continue to rise for Tesla for the next quarter, but be cautious on the year ahead.
Sounds like a sensible strategy, Jessica. Stick to your knitting, Elon. Buy a lithium mine, not Twitter, a social media company. Great talking to you. Great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the voice of Jessica Amir, market strategist with Saxo Bank.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Talking real estate this morning, delighted to be joined in the studio by the head of marketing at Houser, Sarah Hewardine. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Store visas. The overhaul of the UAE visa residency system will, quote, hugely benefit the country's real estate market and bring a significant influx in buyers, according to brokers in the market. Explain the thinking.
So, as you've mentioned, the overhaul of visas is definitely going to have a tremendous impact. So the biggest change that we see, direct impact, really comes down to the 10-year golden visa. So a buyer, if they're buying a property of a 2 million dirham and it can be mortgaged, can now get a 10-year golden visa. They're kind of the direct impacts, and that also allows for off-plan. So historically, you could only actually get the golden visa if you had a title deed. Now you do not need that, and you can buy through off-plan as well, again, over 2 million dirham. To put that in context, the average property price in Dubai is about 2.2. Average for off-plan is 1.7. But when you look over the 2 million dirham, roughly about 35% of the transactions are off-plan. So that's definitely going to unlock a lot of opportunities for people to get the golden visa.
Okay, so who cares about this? Because to play devil's advocate, Sarah, I own my home here. I've been here for 20 years or so, and it's over the amount that you mentioned. But I'm not, doesn't make a big deal to me. I work for a company. I've already got a visa.
Yeah.
Fine. I have had for 20 odd years or so. I'm a wage slave. I work for a company. It's all part of the package. Who does this make a difference to? Because it's not me.
No, I think it also depends on what that mortgage threshold is, okay? So currently, to unlock the three-year investor visa, you do need 50% equity in the business, 50% equity paid and not mortgaged in a property. So we're still waiting for exactly what percentage of that 2 million dirham can be mortgaged. So we're still waiting on that. Now, if that is for, say, 20% LTV, then that definitely can benefit some end users. I think it's going to definitely help more investors when it comes to the golden visa for the pure fact now that you can unlock the golden visa and you don't have to stay for a certain number of days in a year. You can get the 10-year golden visa.
But what's the profile of the person that this matters to? Because for someone like me, long-term expat in Dubai, it doesn't matter because I've got a visa. I've always had a visa.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
I think it's also probably going to help a few more people as they head towards retirement. And it really does come to, you know, unlocking that retirement visa. Owning property is usually the best way to try and get retirement in Dubai. And I think that's definitely going to help a lot of people if they own around 2 million dirham. Bearing in mind, 2 million dirham is pretty affordable now in the market. I think investors, it's definitely going to have a big impact on. A lot of investors, especially more of the higher end investors, will be able to buy a property for maybe 5, 6, 7 million dirham, have a 10-year residency visa. They might have the flexibility to come in and out of Dubai as they choose. I think it's also important to look at, yes, that residency visa, but the other visas that we've seen, so the tourist visa, the multiple entry tourist visa, and the new work permits for temporary work are going to have a really big impact indirectly on the real estate market as well.
It's interesting you talk about retirement. Fascinating discussion yesterday on the agenda with Georgia Tolley about whether you would retire in Dubai or not. And actually, and Georgia will be able to clarify this, but as I was listening, the bigger issue that was raised by people was not so much the visa. It is an issue, and this is welcome. It's medical insurance. And obviously, that's not your scope of expertise, so I'm not going to ask you about that. So let's talk about younger people as well. Because part of these changes are looking at younger people as well. People who are maybe looking at the gig economy. I mean, even, you know, people of our generation, we were brought up thinking, you know, you get a job, you go and work for someone. But for your 19 or 21-year-old now, that's not necessarily the way that they think. That's not their focus. It's more about the gig economy. It's more about providing services to people that they want. How might these changes impact younger people in the housing market?
So I think actually a lot of the changes outside of the dedicated real estate visa changes we've seen are actually targeted towards this Gen Z. So as Gen Z are 25 now, they're getting older, you know, every single year. So I think the fact that Gen Z are now, they have that mentality, as you've mentioned, they are flexible. They want to be able to work for multiple companies. They want to be able to travel around the world. These are people that have gone through formative years in their, you know, as they're getting older, where they've really had to live through COVID. So I think there definitely is that attitude towards seeing the world and seeing different places. And the visas we have available for that, like I say, is the multiple entry tourist visa, but more particularly it's the temporary work visa. So being able to come for 6 months, work for an employer, I think that's definitely going to help a lot of the young professionals. Young professionals as well, coming in for 6 months, where do you go? You rent a home. I think the real impact we'll see there is on short-term rentals, especially on the tourist side and on the entry young professionals. So you're coming in for 6 months, you're going to need to rent and stay in a place. So I think we'll actually see quite a bit of activity from September onwards, as we've seen a really successful short-term rental market. I think we'll actually see that going forward as well from September.
Raj has written in, and again, it's not necessarily your area of expertise, but he raises the question, what about getting a golden visa for people who already own a property over 2 million? Roger's already got his property. He's not going to go and buy one through Hauser or anyone else in the next 6 months or so. What do we know about that?
So we're still waiting for details on exactly what it means, whether you're buying it at point and you can unlock the golden visa, or if you already own a property, whether you can get access. So there's quite a few details that we're waiting on to be completely finalised.
Again, lots of questions coming in about visas, and I'm not going to throw these at you, Sarah, because it's not fair. Amanda's written in about golden visas. I've been here for 14 years in a senior role. I've got a property that's several million dirhams. I've got a salary of 30-odd thousand dirhams. Which visa should I go for? And again, you're not the person to answer that question, but it's interesting, Tom, isn't it, that we're getting so many questions still about visas and people looking at the different types of visas on offer now.
Exactly that, because there are options out there. But just to the point, I think, that was just being made now, that we're still waiting for details on a lot of these visas at the moment, how much they're going to cost, who can qualify. in theory, the initiative is great. It's generating interest, it's generating chats like this, it's making options being open left, right and centre. But we do need to wait for a bit of the small print of things.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. And when you look at the visa changes we've seen even over the last couple of years, that's had a really profound impact on the real estate market. So what we know is this will definitely help the real estate market continue the trends that we've seen in the last, you know, 12 to 24 months. To what extent? Again, it does depend on the fine print. It really does depend on the cost, and it does depend on the individual use case as well.
Quick question from me, though, about this one, because traditionally here, we haven't really talked about the property ladder here that you might talk about back in London or other parts of the world, getting on that property ladder, etc. Because a lot of people come here. Traditionally, it's been stay for 3 years, then you end up staying for a little longer, etc. Is this going to encourage those younger workers looking for opportunities here to jump into real estate, given the sort of security they can now get behind them with visas?
I think so, yeah. And I think it also depends on your home country. I think that definitely has an impact on how attractive you see the golden visa, because a lot of people, maybe if you're coming from a country that isn't maybe as stable as the UAE, you would really be adamant to save, stay in the UAE and unlock that 10-year golden visa so you have that sense of security. So I think, again, it does depend to the individual use case, but I think it's definitely going to encourage a lot more younger people to save. And I think you'll also see a lot of people save and make sure they buy properties over that 2 million dirham mark. Because if you're going for a place at 1.9, I think a lot of individuals will then push their budgets a little bit more. Because why would you not to get, again, unlock that 10-year visa? You do have that stability when you living here and working for an employer. But I think having that as a safety net is wonderful. However, Dubai isn't cheap. You know, you can only be so long here without a job. And especially if you're buying a house at 2 million dirham and maybe you don't have that salary coming in every month, it's definitely something that I think, again, will help a lot more of the investors. But I do think it will attract those younger professionals to save and invest as well.
Rob has written in, what happens to my golden visa when my property value drops? I buy it at 2.1. We don't know, Rob, but it's a really interesting question and an interesting conversation that will continue. Sarah, we're out of time. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
It's the voice of Sarah Huradeen. She is with Houser.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.